So pleasure to be here. I think this is my third time in KITP. So today I'll discuss about this electronic phase separation in complex materials. Here I'll define electronic phase separation in a very broad sense. If two or more than two electronically distinct phases coexist in a given material, I'm going to call that as electronic phase separation. The cause can be chemical phase separation or something else. Now we have this new center, Rutgers Center for Emerging Materials, and co-works are listed here, Rutgers people here. And this work was done in collaboration with Osaka Prefecture University and also Sun Shenzhen in Taiwan National University. I will start with one example of electronic phase separation, defined in my way. Now, this is, of course, CMR system. It's a 1-1-3 phase. And this perovskite phase, the structure becomes destabilized when this rare earth element is replaced by very small rare earth elements like this. This perovskite structure can be stable down to this dysprosium, but after this dysprosium, the new structure comes in. That's a hexagonal layered structure. That hexagonal structure is shown here. The layered structure, this is lutetium oxygen layer, manganese oxygen layer, so on and so forth. So this is a hexagonal. We know this CMR system is a ferromagnetic matter. But these hexagonal systems, without doping the parent system, they are ferroelectric insulators. Now, when we mix these two systems, perovskite system and hexagonal system, they can be mixed up to some degree. There's one exception. If you go to this last element, this lutetium, then there is almost complete immiscibility. They don't mix to each other. So if I try to mix them, then what happens is something like this. So we have, this particular case, we have about 70% lutetium MnO3 hexagonal system, and then this perovskite, 30%. So when we try to mix these two, they don't mix. They are immiscible to each other. And so that when we melt this material, when you melt this material, we have this kind of chemical phase separation. So this purple region, that's where we have this lutetium MnO3, and bright region like here or there, that's where we have this 30% perovskite system. Yes. Okay, so various means, for example, if you do X-ray, we see, when we, in this kind of mixed system, we see two sets of X-ray peaks. Yeah, right. So one corresponds to one end, the other one corresponds to the other end. That's one example. Another example is like this one. This is a polarized optical microscope image. This is 100 micron, and here, this small scale is order of 1 or 2 micrometers. So here we see two different regions. But when we see these two different regions, of course we cannot tell they are this phase or that phase. We cannot really tell. But if we combine with all this other data, such as X-ray or some transport and magnetic data, then we are able to tell which one is what phase. So after spending a lot of time, we figured out this is more or less this ferroelectric region, and that is a ferromagnetic region.
You can do microprobe
analysis so that you can figure out the chemical composition, which does not tell you the structural composition. So again, you have to combine many different techniques to tell really this is lutetium with hexagonal, and that is this composition with perovskite structure. So you need to combine many different techniques. Okay, so going into a little bit more detail about this immutability issue.
Can I ask you, yes. On the bottom it says two-length scale.
Okay, so let's go back here.
The two-length scale, like,
you do see it, right? You have one big blob here, another big blob there.
And it's always like that.
It's always like that. We don't really know why. So this big region, that's where we have all this lutetium. That big region, we have a mixture, finer, smaller scale mixture between lutetium and then lanthanum structure. We don't know why. This tendency remains even if we change this composition.
So are you the buff in the temperature
of these two? That's correct. We melted this guy. We melt by using this floating zone, we go temperature higher than melting temperature of both systems. We melt and then cool it down. This is what happens. Okay, so going into details about this visibility or invisibility issue. So things like X-ray, even though you can roughly tell there are two faces having this structure and that structure, you cannot really tell details. If there is a very small amount of solubility, you cannot really tell from X-ray. If there is solubility, X-ray peaks are supposed to change, such as shifting X-ray peaks. But X-ray resolution is very much limiting. And the best way is, in fact, if there is some well-defined phase transition, how the phase transition temperature changes when you try to mix these two. That's the best way to figure out how much solubility you really have. So in our case, we have this ferromagnetic phase. So ferromagnetic transition temperature is about 370-380 Kelvin. And lutetium MnO3 is ferroelectric, but ferroelectric transition temperature is very high, so that's difficult to measure. But it is anti-ferromagnetic at relatively low temperature, about 80 Kelvin. So by figuring out how anti-ferromagnetic transition of this phase changes with this mixing, or how this ferromagnetic transition of this perovskite system, how that changes as function of a mixing, you can figure out what kind of solubility we have. Here what we see is how ferromagnetic transition temperature of LSMO changes with mixing. One corresponds to pure LSMO system. So that is here. You see, as a function of lutetium mixing, this is increasing lutetium direction. With lutetium mixing, this ferromagneticity drops quickly and then remains like this. So this tells you that is more or less solubility limit. And that concentration turns out to be about 1%. So the chemical phase diagram we have in this mixed system, LMO and LSMO, is we have this kind of visibility gap, and this point is about 1% mixing of LMO into LSMO. The anti-ferromagnetic transition temperature of LMO does not change with this kind of mixing, so that it seems like this solubility is very, very, very much limited. So visibility gap region is very broad like this, so that when you try to mix this one and that one, then what happens is you have this phase and then you have that phase, this 1% mixed phase. So there is a slight solubility, order of 1% in this case, so that ferromagnetic TC of LSMO changes a little bit from something like 370 Kelvin down to 355 Kelvin. That's ferromagnetic transition temperature. So there is slight solubility here. Now, the reason why we studied this system is it was part of our effort to study multi-ferroic system. So this is some kind of ferromagnetism and ferroelectricity, a kind of a composite structure. And we hoped to have significant coupling between magnetism and ferroelectricity in this kind of composite system. So, yes.
So multi-ferroics means multiple ferro order parameters.
Yes.
And Kimura is seeing a lot of those work in a long way, like spin modulation.
Okay.
You're just speaking of ferro.
Yes.
And still we could keep calling them multi-ferroics.
Yes.
It's okay.
It's okay. So what is your question?
That's not the question. It's okay or not.
Presumably there was
how did the coexistence of the ferromagnetic
Electric?
How did the line ferromagnetic and ferroelectric?
Okay. Well, I see. Okay, so in what sense, multiferroic, I define it as some system having magnetism, some kind of magnetic order. Doesn't matter whether it's ferro or anti-ferro or some kind of incommensurability. Some kind of magnetism with ferroelectricity. That's the way I define. But, the realm of semantics. In any case, this case, this is really ferro and ferromagnetic and ferroelectric.
Yeah, well, this was a question about semantics.
Right. Okay, so, we have these two phases. And if there is a cross-coupling between these two, magnetism and ferroelectricity, one might expect some significant change. For example, some significant change of dielectric constant by applied magnetic field. But this particular case, we didn't see that. Okay, so this effort was to find some system having some significant coupling between magnetism and dielectric property, but this particular case, it didn't show anything interesting. On the other hand, I think this is a beautiful example of chemical phase separation leading to electronic phase separation. One phase is metal, the other one is insulator, ferromagnetic, and ferroelectric. One very clear example. As far as I know, there is no other example like this. Okay, so. Yes?
Anything known about the elastic coupling strength, or magnetic elastic coupling?
Between these two phases?
In the ferromagnetic system.
In general, what you're asking this system?
Just in general, do people know about the magnetic elastic effects in the.
I mean, people have studied a lot, this was really introduction, but if you're interested, as function of temperature, if there is magneto-elastic coupling, then as function of temperature, when you have ferromagnetic transition, the volume can change. Or there can be magnetic friction. In other words, the volume can change, or length can change as a function of magnetic field. Right? That's kind of magnetic version. Now, you do have electric version. There's some kind of piezoelectric effect. When you apply electric field, you can change the volume or length. These two can be coupled. These two can be coupled. So these cases, ferromagnetic phase by applying whatever electric field or magnetic field, length may change. That length change could transfer to here, and that can lead to some measurable effect, such as change of the electric constant. So that's one hope when you have this kind of composite system. But apparently there is nothing drastic in this particular system. Maybe that's the reason why we don't have significant change of the electric constant when we apply this kind of magnetic field.
Is this now a multi-ferro one?
Okay, how much time are you going to give me to reach the chair? This is really introduction, but okay. Sorry, I missed it.
Is it really now multi-ferro? I mean, that's one strength, ferromagnetic and ferroelectric.
Exactly, this is. Oh, this is a. Okay. Yes, it is certainly multiferroic, but I tell you, this is pretty much the only example where you can melt, still you have these two phases sitting right next to each other. So it's not easy to find a system like this. Okay? It's not easy to find a system like this. In any case, here the relevant length scale, as you saw, is fairly big, several microns. If there's some way to reduce this length scale all the way down to whatever, nano or, nanoscale, this coupling could be enhanced. So one can try that kind of tricks. Yes? Okay. People have discussed, theoretically. I do not know the details. in the context of multi-ferrics, people have discussed, theoretically. There are a couple of papers. I'll try to find the paper if you're interested.
And the picture you see is basically spinal pattern?
Or yes, it is. It is.
So
basically, it is. It's a kind of a diffusion, the time issue. How fast I cool down the sample compared with how fast the diffusion is. Yes, so it's just a matter of how you synthesize the material, you can change this length scale. It's not intrinsic. On the other hand, I have two different length scales that I don't have much idea. Okay, now. We haven't really studied too much details. The physics was that could be an interesting problem, but we didn't study much. Okay, so now let's move to the main subject, coupling. Hopefully, I can spend the rest of my time, hopefully about half time on cuprate and the other half time for manganite, CMR manganite. And so cuprate, we know this phase diagram, we know possible connection between antiferromagnetism and this high temperature superconductivity in cuprate. People have also discussed something called the Zion proximity effect. Basically, supercurrent can tunnel through very large length scale insulating region. It's something called the Zion proximity effect. Theoretically, that was proposed. And that's again something to do with this connection between antiferromagnetism and high TC superconductivity. Now, because of this kind of background, we were interested whether we can have a similar kind of phase separation between high temperature superconductor and antiferromagnetic insulator. As you know, last about 20 years, people have studied a lot about all kinds of chemical doping into high TC system. Pretty much every possible choices you have in the periodic table, people have tried. And as far as I know, a clear chemical phase separation has not been observed. And in high TC system, if there is any tiny solubility, that dopant tends to kill superconductivity, unless it produces charge carriers. So we spent some time to find some system where chemical phase separation or electron phase separation can be realized in high TC system. We tried quite a few systems, and most of them didn't work, but one system worked very well, surprisingly well. So what we tried was this cuprate, this layered cuprate, 2-1-4 system. And there is something called the 2-2-5 phase. So rare earth, copper, oxygen 5, copper is here 2+. This is an antiferromagnetic insulator. Near transition temperature is about 19 Kelvin. So basically what we found is when we try to mix this, they don't mix. They are immiscible to each other. Yeah, basically something like that. Yeah. So if you try to put lutetium into a site, it never works. That's basically what we found. Oh, lutetium side also, nothing goes in. None of this, at least. None of this goes in. Lanthanum does not go in here. Strontium does not go in here. And of course, this rare earth can be different rare earth element, such as whatever, ytterbium, erbium, those things can go in here. But large element like lanthanum does not go in.
This is a green paper.
No, I don't make sample myself anymore, so I don't remember the color. let's see. No, this is not that green face. Not the famous Porcius green face is not this one. That's not this one. But this has also some color. I think it does have some greenish color. Okay, sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'll find that out. Okay. Okay. So here, as I mentioned, you have to use all kinds of techniques, many different techniques to find out this kind of solubility or immiscibility issue. So for example, like X-ray, when you try to mix these two, LSCO and LCO, So this is LCO X-ray peaks. The other one is that one is L zero. So this LCO X-ray, sorry. Okay, this is LCO X-ray peaks. Red is LCO X-ray peaks, and this black is LCO X-ray peaks. And when you try to mix them, like in between these, you have both peaks, and the height changes according to this number, according to this concentration. So this basically tells you the solubility is very, very little. These two phases, they don't mix. But still, there can be very small amount of solubility. This is optical microscope image. Here, we have 80% LCO, 20% LCO, 20% LCO, and 80% LCO. And this is a polished surface, mechanically polished surface. And here is a 10 micron, and that region, this larger region, flat region, they are LCO. Okay. That region is LCO. So this case, LCO is less, LCO here, LCO there. That case, LCO is more. So this is LCO. Think like this, that is LSCO. That's 20%. Okay, hopefully that's clear. Yes?
So you have regions of both that could be either 3D line in the sense that in all three space directions could be extended by
the Yes.
You could also have regions that are maybe more 2D line.
It's possible. The only thing what we did is a kind of a polycrystalline like a big material we chop, polish, and that's the image. And we don't really know kind of three-dimensional topology. In principle, there can be some interesting topology between them, and one might be able to control them, especially when you make films. Okay, so hopefully this image is clear to everybody. And one thing I want to note is there is some difference in height. This LSCO region and LCO region, there is some difference in height. Again, this is a polished surface. After polishing, the height, LCO is somewhat higher, LCO is higher in height and lower in LSCO region. LSCO region is somewhat lower. That's because LSCO is mechanically soft, so you can polish more easily. LCO is mechanically harder, so it's more difficult to polish. So the height is a little bit higher here, LCO region. So remember, LCO is mechanically harder. That becomes important later on. So they are more or less immiscible, but there can be still very small amount of solubility. Now, here we see magnetic data, and this is, of course, superconducting transition. And what you see is when you change, here X is LCO X. Okay, so when you change X, superconducting volume fraction goes down, naturally. That's consistent with this two-phase coexistence. What is amazing is this transition temperature, magnetic transition temperature, does not change with this doping. Again, high T system, we know any kind of doping can influence superconducting transition temperature drastically. So if there is a small amount of solubility, it can reduce superconducting transition very, very fast. But as far as I can tell, we can tell, we don't really see any shift of transition temperature. So superconducting transition, magnetic superconducting transition temperature does not change when you try to mix these two. Not just that, here what we see is, let's see, there are actually two different axes. These two is dead axis, that is supposedly dead axis. And they have a different scale. In any case, both are magnetic susceptibility. And this is a M member, LCO. And this sharp feature is due to anti-ferromagnetic transition of this insulating phase. And when you have this kind of mixed system, when you have 20% LCO, we still see this feature at the same temperature, about 19 Kelvin. So this also tells you that anti-ferromagnetic transition temperature of this insulating phase does not change even if you try to mix them. So superconducting transition temperature does not change. Anti-ferromagnetic transition temperature does not change. So this is consistent with phase separation, chemical phase separation, as well as electronic phase separation. So somehow this lutetium case, there is very clean chemical phase separation, very, very limited solubility between them.
So we know it's chemical phase separation.
We know it is chemical phase separation. That's right.
Physically separated.
That's true. So we have now this very nice three-dimensional Bohr system where we have a metallic region and an insulated region, and we can control the volume fraction of relative volume fraction between these two phases. So this is a when you measure the transport property, we have a more or less percolation type conduction. So pure system, it's a log scale temperature. Pure system, superconducting transition here. And when we increase the amount of insulating phase going this way, the temperature dependence more or less remains same, more or less metallic-like. Even though the magnitude of resistivity changes by many, many orders of magnitude. So here, like four, five, six, about six orders of magnitude changes, at least in the data we see here. But the temperature dependence is almost the same. So this is the best example of percolation type electronic conduction. So temperature dependence is metallic-like, the magnitude changes a lot. The way this magnitude changes as function of this composition or as function of volume fraction, one can do this type of analysis. Percolation type conduction, resistivity is supposed to follow this power law with a certain resistivity exponent. In our data, as well as temperature, like 60 Kelvin and 200 Kelvin, so we chop here or somewhere here, just above the transition temperature, and then how the magnitude changes as a function of this volume fraction of metallic phase. If you do this analysis, then we can get this exponent, that exponent. The one we got is about 3.4. That's significantly larger than this. This is a percolation concentration. In our case, percolation concentration turns out to be about 26%. And this threshold concentration is not supposedly universal, but this exponent T is supposedly a universal constant, and that is supposedly about 2. No, this is the bulk mixed system. Yeah, bulk mixed. 3D percolation model. Yes. So this threshold concentration about 0.26, and this exponent, experimentally we got something like 3.4, and classical percolation theory tells us it should be about 2, and that should be universal number, but somehow it didn't work here. This here, here. Not much. Okay. If you are still interested, you can ask me again later on, because it may be related with some of the other issues I'm going to discuss. Okay, so far so good, right? So we have a very clean chemical phase separation. And, you know, as a materials person, this is a surprise. Again, you know, after 20 years of research on high TC with all kinds of doping, and people never found this kind of clean chemical phase separation, but it can be done in this particular case. But nothing surprised so far. Nothing really surprised in terms of physics, I would say. But we were surprised by this data. So here, this is a pure system. X equals 1 means pure superconducting phase. Magnetic susceptibility goes like this. So transition temperature somewhere here. Resistivity is here. Resistivity changes like this, bang. So this is superconducting transition temperature. They match nicely. But in mixed system, like when X is 0.6, magnetic susceptibility here, this is a resistivity here. Resistivity transition temperature is much higher than magnetic transition temperature. 0.32 is here, 0.32 magnetic susceptibility here. Again, transition temperature is more or less fixed here. 0.32, resistivity is like that. So the onset transition temperature is significantly higher than magnetic transition temperature.
It's a naive question, but in one with percolation, I just have one percolating path going through the system. Can it be that you just locally change even a tiny bit TC in some of this drains and therefore there is one percolation path that just goes.
Yes, yes, yes. That's basically what this data is telling us, right? So magnetic susceptibility is more or less averaged quantity, more or less volume. Resistivity depends on how percolation occurs, especially this kind of a small change of resistivity in superconductive transition temperature, so-called onset transition temperature, will be very much depends on the percolation path. So this data basically tells us so this increase of TC in transport in mixed system here, that is something to do with most likely some kind of interfacial effect. We have two phases sitting right next to each other. Somewhere in interface, somehow transition temperature is higher, and percolation occurs through those interfacial regions. I think that's what this data is saying. Yes, 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 right. Yes, yes. Right, I'm getting there, yes. Yeah. Yeah, you can say that. I mean, you know, we didn't spend enough time to figure out, this has been, pure system has been studied a lot. Usually it's very sharp. That is true. Usually very sharp. That is true. And this tail, it very depends on very details, you know, like grain connectivity and how the sample was cooled down when you did this measurement, what kind of magnetic field was applied. All these details come in for this. That's for magnetic susceptibility. You asked a question about resistivity tail. That case, again, a kind of weak link between grains, that also is an important issue. But that's not the real focus of this discussion. In any case, you are right in the sense that pure system doesn't seem so clean, but now we made the system even dirtier. We put a lot of junk in it, right? We put a lot of this insulating phase, and this is somehow enhanced. It is certainly a surprise to me. So we did a little bit more systematic analysis. Okay.
Okay.
Film-like physics. Yeah. Well. Okay. Okay. If you give me just 1 minute. Yeah. 1 minute. 1 minute. I can. Okay. So here. We did a little bit more systematic analysis of how TC changes. And you know, TC can be defined in various means. And here what we did was temperature derivative of resistivity, shows a peak-like feature. And the onset transition temperature is where this thing turns up. And kind of so-called midpoint is somewhere on this peak position. And pure system is here, so reasonably sharp. This is again for resistivity, and all this mixed system, the transport data is like this. So mixed system, even this midpoint goes up, and also onset transition temperature goes up a lot. And that is shown here. So the peak temperature from resistivity increases like this when you have a mixing. This is the pure system. And the onset transition temperature goes up like this. And magnetic susceptibility onset transition temperature does not change with this mixing. So magnetic transition temperature does not change with this X. This is again kind of averaged quantity. Resistivity depends on percolation. And this transition temperature nicely increases, becomes maximum at more or less percolation point. You know, which percolation point is about here. So when these things are barely, metallic faces are barely connected to each other, that's when onset transition temperature is highest. So that's again consistent with some kind of interfacial effect. Yes.
You were referring to more two-dimensional features, and I'm pretty much reminded of the observation that granular materials seem to be having in general a higher TC than the crystalline materials. For example, say aluminum pure crystalline.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. Right.
But it can tremendously be enhanced, And this is not a 2D phenomenon, but rather.
So that's interesting analogy, but I would say the we are talking about very different length scales. Granular material, you are talking about basically 10 angstrom length scale physics. This is here we are talking about.
Because I remember many years ago this issue about granular supergranular. I'm not sure about length scale.
It is. Usually it's 10 angstrom length scale physics. But this is a much larger length scale of phase coexistence. So it's micron scale, as you saw. I think the physics is somewhat different. It's a more interfacial physics issue. But at the interface, whether some kind of a granular physics comes in, that's difficult to answer. That's a certain interesting thought. Okay, let me just proceed to this part, if you don't mind, because I have many other things I want to show you. So what is happening is basically, you know, some comment came in. I should say this. Our starting point is we want to see some kind of connection between antiferromagnetism and superconductivity. That's why we want to have this kind of phase mixed system. Now, we have this enhanced TC in resistivity, not in magnetic susceptibility. And we are trying to see whether that TC enhancement, how that changes as function of strontium concentration. Remember, I discussed this optimum composition, strontium 0.15. And resistivity transition is enhanced. If, let's say, pseudo gap physics is related with this kind of TC enhancement in this kind of antiferromagnetic insulated phase mixed system, then I would imagine this TC enhancement could be more drastic in underdoped region. So that the strontium concentration dependence of this kind of effect could be interesting. So we studied, I don't have data here to show you, but we studied how this effect changes as function of strontium concentration, right? So strontium concentration is within this LSCO region. So when you change this strontium concentration, we found that this TC enhancement is optimized where TC is optimized. So when strontium concentration is about 0.15, 0.17, this effect is more or less optimized. When you go to underdoped region, this effect is suppressed. So that we didn't see any kind of direct connection between pseudo gap physics and this kind of effect. Yes?
Sorry, I have one more question. Is that consistent with hydrostatic pressure effects on
all
channels?
That's here. Okay. So we don't have every numbers, but the rough picture we have so far is some kind of strain effect at the interfacial region. That's what we guess about. As I mentioned, LSCO is mechanically soft. LSCO is mechanically hard, difficult to polish. Now, when you change the temperature, the thermal expansion is also quite different. LSCO tends to contract a lot. LSCO does not contract. LSCO basically remains as constant as function of temperature. LSCO contracts a lot. This guy is mechanically soft. Lattice stiffness constant is smaller. And these two faces are sitting right next to each other. This one does not contract as function with cooling. That one tried to contract, but this guy is holding that one. This is mechanically hard so that it can hold this soft one. So basically, LSCO provides tensile strain on LSCO grain, especially at the interfacial region. I think that's very natural. I won't go into all these numbers, but that's more or less, seems like that's more or less what is happening in this system. And one small thing I want to note is this temperature, this is for strontium 0.15 pure system, and this anomaly, AV constant, this anomaly is due to tetragonal here or thrombic there. Tetragonal orthorhombic transition. That's slightly below 200 Kelvin. Okay? Slightly below 200 Kelvin, tetragonal orthorhombic transition occurs in this strontium 0.15 sample. Now, when you measure resistivity in this temperature range, close to pure system, like this one, we don't see any feature whatsoever at the structure transition temperature. So like even pure system, which is more or less like this, there is no feature at structure transition temperature. But in this mixed system, like this concentration, you see this clear anomaly here. Very clear anomaly in resistivity. And we think this is due to tetragonal autonomy transition. Remember, the transition temperature is supposedly slightly below 200 Kelvin around here. And this transition, this tetragonal autonomy transition temperature tends to go down with pressure, with squeezing. This temperature goes down. So the tensile strain should increase this transition temperature. And if this anomaly is due to structure transition, that means in this mixed system, the transition temperature, structure transition temperature is enhanced. So mixed system, the transition temperature is enhanced. That transition can be very nicely seen in transport data. In near pure system or pure system, the transition cannot be seen in resistivity, and also the transition temperature is supposedly lower around this temperature. So if this is really due to this structure transition, this data also indicates there is a tensile strain at the interfacial region. So that transition temperature is higher, and also whenever you go through this transition temperature, so you 0.36 sample blue curve, it goes down like this, going up like that, and goes down like this. This one keep going up like this. So this also indicates at the interfacial region, there is a strained region. I would say there is some kind of a micro cracking occurs at the interfacial region, so that whenever structure transition occurs, resistivity tend to show this irreversible behavior, keep going up.
Do you have a steady state for this behavior?
Steady state. Oh, I see. Okay. This already took several days, so we couldn't, because you have to go down to all the low temperature coming up. So we did, how many times we did? 1, 2, 3. I think we did a couple more times, but we never saw saturation so far. You were not patient enough to wait, whatever. Yes?
When it did apply along
CF. Right. Right. You are absolutely right. This is not your paper, right? I'm sorry. So I should have mentioned your paper. I should have mentioned your Takagi Sensei's paper, which was here somewhere and it's missing. So basically, what he and his group found was if you do uniaxial strain on LSCO system, then AB direction contraction tends to increase TC. C direction contraction tends to decrease TC. In fact, this C direction effect is much larger than AB direction effect. So along C direction, if there is tensile strain, that's going to enhance TC. That's going to enhance TC. So that is consistent with the kind of discussion I have read so far. Sorry, there should be some slide of your paper. Somehow it's missing.
About this structure effect.
Yeah, right.
Normally, the axis in the compression stabilizes also with distortion because of this impact.
Yeah, right.
You use increase of TC associated with CF.
Okay, this is the main thing. So AB direction, at the structure transition temperature, the main anomaly is AB direction, not C direction. C direction, you barely see something here. There is something, but it's very small. The main effect is AB direction. So AB direction, tensile strain. So this is if you follow this line, right? If you follow this line, this one has a larger volume. Larger volume, so that tensile strain will stabilize this low temperature phase.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm kind of mixing up TC case. TC case is C direction tensile strain, and this structure transition is AB direction tensile strain. Okay, so I think this, in some sense, is probably doesn't excite too many theorists on this. It's a more strain type rather than pseudo gap or interferometric type. That's the way, you know, we think. But you know, we don't have any kind of a microscopic proof. As I mentioned, you can make this other system like the scandium-225, erbium-225, but all these cases, there is a chemical solubility. There is always mixing and TC goes down. Lutetium is the only one. Lutetium is somehow the only one, there is no mixing and it does this kind of strain effect. Okay, so so in X-ray also you can tell how the mixing occurs, but I don't have to discuss the details over this. Okay, now about the manganite and I. Okay. 10:30. Okay, 10:30. Yeah. Okay. I mean I can stop now if you want. I'll be happy. Okay. Yeah. Let's see how far we can go. Okay. So CMR system for this audience, probably I don't have to tell you this, but anyway, briefly, this is a lanthanum calcium manganite phase diagram, and for fixed calorie concentration like this, calcium concentration, if you change the size of ion, so in this case, lanthanum praseodymium and mixing, Y is parameter here, Y is parameter here, then TC changes like this, and then this is a ferromagnetic TC changes like this, and Charlie ordering transition comes in like that. The one we discussed earlier, lanthanum strontium manganite, TC is much higher. TC is much higher, so in this language, so-called tolerance factor, or ion radius, TC of that system is about here, way up there. So TC can very, very broad range like this. Charlie ordering temperature does not change much, just a little bit here. So this point is some kind of bicritical point. Okay, so in this mixed system, lanthanum praseodymium calcium, in this range, TC changes like that, TCO changes like this, and how the magnetic susceptibility changes is shown here. It seems rather complicated. So why is praseodymium concentration, pure system, pure lanthanum calcium manganite is here, nice ferromagnetic transition at this temperature, and this is 0.625 is pure praseodymium calcium system. There is no ferromagnetic transition. This is susceptibility. So there is some very defined feature which you cannot see here. That's a charge ordering transition temperature. When you mix them, when you mix this lanthanum and praseodymium, you see some very complicated changes. I'm going to discuss three features. I certainly don't have time to discuss all of them, but I planned to discuss three features. One is more or less this the magnitude in this mixed system, magnitude is more or less in between these two. Okay, this kind of intermediate magnitude of mixed system is not due to some kind of weak ferromagnetism or cantid interferomagnetism. This intermediate value is due to phase coexistence. And this magnitude tells you actually volume fraction of ferromagnetic phase. That's aspect number one. Aspect number two is, for example, a system like this, you see two ferromagnetic type transitions. And that is something to do with a ferromagnetic domain structure change. Ferromagnetic domain structure changes as a function of temperature. That's why we see kind of two steps in this temperature range. The third issue I plan to discuss was, you see this small feature here? And that feature somehow remains everywhere in this mixed system, from here all the way to there. It's not clear there, but at least here you see it. The temperature does not change in this broad composition range. And that's the third issue I plan to discuss. Okay, and let me just briefly go through some of this. So this phase coexistence issue is, so we have this charge ordering phase and ferromagnetic phase. When you mix lanthanum and praseodymium, we have a charge ordered region, charge ordered inflated region coexists with ferromagnetic metallic phase, where you see ferromagnetic domain structure like this. So two phases do coexist. This shows you scanning photo emission data. So this data basically, this is a photo emission angle integrated photo emission, but spatially resolved. So you do scanning. The spatial resolution in this case is about half micron. They can go down to something like 0.1 micron, but this data was taken with half micron spatial resolution. Nice thing about this technique is you can study what happens around Fermi energy, as well as you can do some kind of chemical analysis. And basically what we found was different regions. One region can be insulating like this, another region can be metallic like that, even though chemical composition within experimental uncertainty, there is no difference in chemical composition. So simultaneously here, we can study both chemical composition as well as what happens around Fermi energy. So there is a significant difference near Fermi energy, but chemical composition, there's no difference in this case. So this example is completely different from previous two examples. Previous two examples, we have electron phase separation, but that was caused by chemical phase separation. This case, chemically, it's homogeneous, but electronically, they are very, very different. That's what we found. This situation mimics a little bit like what happens in multi-citric system. Here shows one example. This is a plutonium, slightly doped with gallium. So it's a plutonium and slightly doped gallium. I stole this slide from Colin Booth. So in this case, when you have a little bit gallium doping into plutonium, these two different structures, alpha prime phase and delta phase, they coexist like this. In micron length scale, they coexist like this. Two different structural phases, they do coexist, even though chemical composition is homogeneous. That is something to do with strain induced by this low temperature phase, alpha prime phase. Let me skip this. So basically, what I told you so far is that this kind of intermediate magnitude is due to the reduced amount of ferromagnetic volume fraction when you mix with praseodymium. It's not due to canting of canted antiferromagnetism. And as I told you, this two-step transition, one-step, two-step, that transition is something to do with this change of ferromagnetic domain structure that I have a video here, but I don't have time, and also this doesn't really work here, so I'll just skip this. Now, the last issue is about this sharp transition at low temperature. It's fixed as functional composition. And depending on how good sample you prepare and also how you measure this, that transition can be very, very sharp, like this. So we have this is one of the mixed system, praseodymium, something like 0.41. Many different samples we see here. So this is a charge ordering transition, and then ferromagnetic transition. Okay, so hopefully you can visualize this. You can match this to the phase diagram. So charge ordering transition here, ferromagnetic transition there, and then something else happens here. Bang! It's a very, very sharp transition at around 25 Kelvin. It's a very sharp transition. And so this is a zero field cool, and then apply field at lowest temperature, and then upon warming, we have taken this data. But if you do field cooling, the data goes up here. So zero field cooling, very small magnetization, but field cooling is way up there. Somewhat similar with spin glass like this. Now, this behavior is also closely associated with the change of resistivity. Here, what we see is a log-scale resistivity and also log-scale temperature for fixed praseodymium concentration, but different magnetic field. This is kilostat, 8 kilostat, 30 kilostat, so on and so forth. So this charge ordering transition, and for example, like this curve, let's say this is a ferromagnetic transition, and then something else happens, and then bang, it's so large so that below this temperature we cannot measure. So here, what you see is a real CMR effect. For zero magnetic field, this is zero magnetic field curve. Zero magnetic field goes up. Beyond this, it's so high so that we cannot measure. If you believe this is going up like this, then by applying a couple of Tesla magnetic field, 3 Tesla here, the change of resistivity is something like at 10 Kelvin, let's say, At 10 Kelvin, the change of resistivity is something like 15 orders of magnitude. So that's true CMR effect. And again, in this temperature range, depending on upright magnetic field, this very ultra sharp transition goes down drastically with increasing magnetic field and eventually disappears. In a temperature like this, we see only strange behavior here, but more or less ferromagnetic transition here, and this transition is gone. So there is this strange transition at this kind of temperature range. And magnetization shows a very sharp feature here, right? And also charge sector shows a very, very sharp transition here. So I put them together, resistivity, log scale temperature, magnetization. The previous magnetization was linear scale temperature, but this is log scale temperature. So this drop is associated with this drop of resistivity. So this low temperature state is having low magnetization and high resistivity. So again, this phase diagram, our sample is somewhere here. And this data was taken upon warming. So this is a cooling ferromagnetic transition temperature. That's a warming ferromagnetic transition temperature. And new transition I was talking about is not shown here. It's somewhere here. So this transition is somewhere here. And then upon warming, you see that transition. And then this transition is for cooling, so you don't see that transition. And then you see that transition. And then you see charge ordering transition. And this one, two, three, that transition changes with applied magnetic field, like this way. That's consistent with applied field is consistent with decreasing presence concentration like that direction. And so resistivity for one fixed magnetic field, like one Tesla, cooling, warming, and zero field, and field cool, that data is shown here. So zero field cool, and then zero field cool upon warming, bang, transition. And then this, and this supposedly ferromagnetic transition. And then supposedly charge ordering transition here. Cooling, charge ordering transition is reproduced. And then field cooling, we have this ferromagnetic transition here, bang. And then follows this curve. And then after field cooling, warming follows this curve, red curve here, red is here. So this part is completely reproduced. That part is reproduced. Now, if you blow up this region, it's here. So this blue curve, you see this feature. Even though this black curve does not show any feature in this scale, neither this red curve in this range. But if you blow up the red curve as well as black curve, all shows some feature here. So even though it shows quite different behavior, whether it's field cool, zero field cool, or warming and cooling, still, a very defined feature always shows up at this temperature, around 25-30 Kelvin. That's true for resistivity as well as magnetization. And we also measured thermal conductivity, which is dominated by acoustic phonons. So that is something to do with the lattice fluctuation. This lattice section also shows a difference between zero field and field cool. Lattice section also shows difference between shows some similar behavior like what we see in spin glass, but it's a lattice section. And resistivity, for example, shows also a strange fluctuation above this temperature, and that becomes frozen or below that temperature. Okay, so I don't have time. So we call this phase, this low temperature phase, as a strained glass phase, and this mimics with spin. A strained glass phase we call, and this mimics a spin glass phase. But this case, lattice, charge, and spin all comes in. They all behave like what spins do in spin glasses. And as you know, spin glass is very much different from superparamagnetism. Even though superparamagnetism has a so-called blocking temperature, the interaction between spins are not important in superparamagnetism. But spin glass case interaction is important. And in our case also, we do believe that this interaction is important. And I really am late, so okay. So we have another sample like this. We also found that depending on how fast you warm up, the resistivity magnitude in this temperature range was very much different. In this temperature range, resistivity, whether with fast heating or slow heating, the magnitude is quite different. In other words, this temperature range is very much dynamic. we see this kind of relaxation behavior only this temperature range, and that becomes completely frozen. So this is some kind of freezing transition, and we call this a strain glass, and there is some connection, some analogy with what strain glass does. I should stop at this point. Thank you. Confuse everybody, that's the whole idea.
So is the word strain, did you say that because you know which thing is being strained, or is this a semantic? Because I've heard other talks on the manganites, and people say there's a glass, but it's a tipping glass of the octahedron.
Okay, I think you are probably talking about something called orbital glass.
Okay, I've heard that.
Yeah, that phrase as well. Okay, I think it's a little bit different object we are talking about. That's again a very, very small length scale. It's like real glass, very small length scale. That's like spin glass or real window glass. But here I'm talking about much larger scale, like a micron length scale. And but when we have like centimeter, meter scale samples, this micron scale, there is a strain comes in. This strain tends to randomly freeze. And there is interaction between different regions. And they tend to randomly freeze. It's a it undergoes a very defined phase transition. That's the one I'm trying to convince you, but I'm sure I believe I went through a little bit too fast. But it's quite different physics I'm talking about. I can tell you, what I can tell you is we don't see any sharp transition, sharp feature in specific heat. Whether there is a broad feature or not is difficult to tell. It's very difficult to tell. Because there are all this, there are all kinds of degrees of freedom here. Spin is there, orbital is there, and the lattice is there. So specific heat is difficult to analyze. Whether there is a broad feature or not is difficult to tell. I don't have data.
Because you just told me that the temperature for the glass condition is much lower than any other before, right?
Yes.
So by the time you had a few Kelvin, a lot of things are frozen out and discussed. And then you're saying that the strain glass, all of the even charged glass are all getting more.
Yes.
So you don't have to separate them, basically. I'm just asking whether you see some feature in the entropy.
Okay. I don't have data here. And the data shows enough features so that I can claim there is a broad feature. Let me put that way.
Okay, thank you.